Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
I'll be reading from Matthew 8, verses 1 through 4. When Jesus came down from the mountain, large crowds followed him, and a leper came to him and bowed down before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I am willing, be clean." And immediately his leprosy was cleaned. And Jesus said unto him, "See that you tell no one, but go, show yourself to the priest, and present the offering that Moses commanded as a testimony to him."
Good morning. If you haven't already, please open to Matthew chapter 8, and that'll be our text this morning, Matthew chapter 8, verses 1 through 4. For some of you, this sermon's going to sound familiar, for a very few of you, because it originated about a year ago over in the small auditorium as a Bible class when I was teaching about the heart of Jesus. But it developed into a sermon that was shared in India this past month, and something neat happened while I was preaching there and just noticing the reception, because there was an unintended consequence due to some of the wording as I spoke about touching the untouchable. But I want to share it with you this morning and mention a little bit about why it was received so well there. But I want to highlight it with some photos from our trip to India. While I might not be talking about these photos, they certainly will highlight our trip and the information that I share this morning. But when we go to India, we're essentially trying to share the two main points that I see in this text this morning, and that's the power of touch and the power of the word. Well, let me ask you first this morning to hold your hands up just for a moment and take a good look at your hands in front of your eyes. Don't be afraid. It's okay to hold your hands up in church. Take a good look at your hands, and I want you to just think, if there were a documentary made about your hands, and it were on the screens this morning, what would we see? If there were a movie playing this morning about the life of your hands, probably all of our movies, our documentaries, would begin the same way. It might begin with an infant's hand gripping a father's finger. Maybe as that hand grows, it'll be gripping a spoon and feeding itself. Maybe that hand will grow and be reaching out for balance as a toddler learns to walk for the first time. Maybe as that hand grows, it'll stroke a dog and pet a dog. Maybe that hand will be seen even snatching a toy away from a sibling. Maybe as that hand grows, maybe it'll even be pushing a sibling away. But probably in this movie, over the life of our hands, there's going to be some things we're proud of, and there's going to be some things that we're ashamed of. We'd be proud to see our hands giving a gift to someone. We'd be proud to see our hands putting a ring on someone's finger. We'd be proud to see our hands folded in prayer. But probably there are some things we'd be ashamed of as well. See, our hands have multiple uses. Our hands can be used to help others, or they can be used to hurt others. They can be used to give to others or to take away. They can be used to love others or to wound others. They can be used to lift others up or even to shove others down. But if our hands are managed well, they can be the very touch of God. And that's what we want them to be. That's what we're talking about this morning. Touching the untouchable. I was about halfway through this sermon when I started to look at the eyes of some of the recipients, some of the listeners, and noticed there's something different happening here in terms of the reception of this sermon. And it hit me that untouchability, this phrase, this word, untouchability, takes on a different level of meaning in India than it does to us in the way we use English. It takes on a different meaning. Maybe it's understood more in India in the same level as leprosy to a Jew, as we read about. For about 50 years now in India, there's been laws outlawing discrimination. And I've got to admit, things are getting much better. Yet the caste system in India is alive and well. Things are so much better in urban populations, in big cities, but it's definitely present in rural situations. The caste system, that is, that society is divided up into a hierarchy of different levels of social classes, and what class you're in is based solely on heredity. You're born into it, and there's nothing you can do to move up or down that hierarchy of social classes. Traditionally, what this meant in India is that you're born into a social caste, and therefore that determines what level of education you can receive. That determines what possible occupations you can have. That determines who you can live next to and who you can associate with. Traditionally, they would only associate with others in the same caste. But it's getting so much better, especially in big cities. Today, it takes a form more in social situations. As I heard one young man describe, he described going to meet the mother of a young woman that he was interested in. And when he met her, she belonged to what we'll call caste X. And when she met him, she was smiling ear to ear because she thought he belonged to caste X. But then she realized, upon learning, that he actually belonged to caste Y. He described her saddened face as a child who had just lost his favorite toy. But at the bottom of that hierarchy in India are 200 million people who are known as untouchables. Traditionally, they've been deemed impure, less than human. They've been looked at as a pollution on their society. The occupations that are open to them are street sweepers and sanitation workers. Let's focus our attention on Matthew chapter 8, verses 1 through 4, and think about the story that is told here in this short account. There's three accounts of this event in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and yet none of them give us a great amount of information. What we do know from Matthew's account in chapters 5, 6, and 7 is that Jesus has been up on the mountain. He's been preaching the Sermon on the Mount, the greatest sermon that's recorded in Scripture. It was monumental in the way that he moved from outward items such as murder and adultery and earthly treasures and transitioned to the heart of those matters and spoke about anger and lust and laying up treasures in heaven. And he's coming down now from the mountain when we pick up the reading in chapter 8. It says, when he came down from the mountains, great crowds followed him, and behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I will be clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, see that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the gift that Moses commanded for proof to them. Some of the other accounts basically only add the bit of information that he didn't go and keep it to himself as he was instructed. He went and told others, and therefore Jesus' fame rose. But of all the various diseases that Jesus healed, of all the various miracles that he performed, this leprous man kind of stands out to me as one of those, because it's such a physical disease, one of those who was most drastically changed by the compassionate touch of Jesus. But yet there's so little detail in the Bible about this man. Because of that little bit of detail, usually as Bible teachers, when we come to this text in Bible class, maybe we spend most of our time talking about leprosy as an analogy for sin. It's a perfect analogy for sin. Because leprosy was an inward disease, but yet its effects were shown on the outside, just like sin. It was a disease that corrupted one physically, whereas sin corrupts one spiritually. It's a disease that separated one from society, just as we know sin puts enmity or a separation, a chasm, in between God and man. But the point is, this morning, leprosy was viewed by the Jews the way that untouchability is viewed in India. While the word caste is not found in the Bible, I do believe that casteism has existed in most all societies. Certainly it has existed in our own society in its own form. But with the Hindu caste system being 3,000 years old, that means that it was in the world at the same time that Jesus was walking on the earth. That means that if the tradition is true that the Apostle Thomas made it to India and died there, then the Apostle Thomas encountered this system of classes. I wonder if that tradition is true, I wonder if the Apostle Thomas was put to death for sharing a gospel of equality in a land of inequality. Certainly that gospel was not to be shared both with the Brahmin at the top and the untouchables at the bottom. But the idea is even present in the Bible. Frankly, if we think about the Jews and their attitudes in the time of Jesus, they basically looked at everyone as if they were a lower caste than themselves, because they had become so proud of their heritage, they had failed to be the blessing that God wanted them to be to all other nations. As we look in Scripture, the Samaritans come to mind as a group of people that were looked down upon by the Jews. Because the Samaritans were not fully Jew and also not fully Gentile, they were a group of people that they had lots of arguments and disputes with over the years, and therefore they just wanted nothing to do with them. They didn't even want to enter into the territory where the Samaritans lived. That's why when you come to John chapter 4, it was so amazing, so outrageous, that Jesus wanted to walk through Samaria. And then he stops there at the well and even speaks with a Samaritan woman. When you come to Luke chapter 10, that's why the Good Samaritan was probably the most difficult parable of Jesus for his listeners to accept, because it destroys this idea of casteism and puts men on an equal level. Jesus looked at lepers the way that Christians are looking at untouchables today in India. What I think is so fascinating about Christianity in India is the so many ways that Christians are touching the untouchables with a compassionate touch of Jesus. And it's also fascinating the way that, because of that compassionate touch, the way that the powerful way that the word is being accepted by all men in that land. As I preached that sermon for the first time, it really hit me afterwards when the preacher stood up, and I don't know exactly what all he was saying to the crowd, but he was going on and on and on, and every now and again I'd make out the word untouchability. But then he turned and said, "Truly, this is a powerful and needed sermon." He said, "Because wherever the word of Jesus goes in India, the caste system is crumbling." As we made our way into India, we flew into Chennai, which is in the southeastern portion of the country. And we spent our first couple of days there with Peter Solomon and others, and with the National Bible College, where they were having a lectureship and then a graduation. I know for years, all my life, I've been hearing us talk about Peter Solomon and the National Bible College. This year was the 30th batch of graduates to go forth from that school. And even though this was my 12th trip to India, it's taken me quite a bit of time to wrap my head around what exactly is the purpose of the National Bible College. Because in my Western way of thinking, I've traditionally talked about it as a preacher training school, and talk about the gospel preachers that are going forth from that place. And in a sense, that's true. Probably about 10% of its graduates go out as full-time preachers. But what I've come to realize is that the National Bible College is a center for training Christian men and women to go out and be light in the darkest parts of the world. Because students are coming from all over India. Students are coming from Nepal and Bangladesh and Myanmar, and from dark places in the world. And after being trained for 2 years, they're going back and being light in those places. But they're not just going back to their home home places. They're going even further. We know of graduates that are now living and being light in China. We know of graduates that are living and working with churches as far away as Canada. So it's the sinner that's sending light into a dark world. Brother Solomon's he's an inspiration. At his age and all that he's done, he's an inspiration. We spent some time with Jebba Kumar, who many of you will remember. He's visited us on two occasions in 2016 and 2019. He's come for a couple of different activities. Possibly you remember the story that we shared of him in 2018. He had identified this new area, a piece of land called Chimbrambakam, where it's on the road to where the new international airport is going to be built. And he said, before the city grows up in this place, we need to plant a church. And so he had sold his home, and that covered about a third of the purchase price for a piece of land. And then Greymere and another church over in Manchester together managed to come up with the rest of the funds for that piece of land. And then in 2019, you may remember, we passed the basket and took up a special collection so that we could build a church building on that land. And then we built another level on that church building on top of it for JK and his family to live in. So 3 years later, what the vision he had has come true, because we go and visit and the city has grown up all around this place. It's now an urban city, but also the church has been growing with it. 3 years later, the church membership now has eclipsed that 100 member mark. And it was so interesting to have the opportunity to sit with him, and he's now identified another place on down the road, actually where the international airport is going to be built, and he's now got his eyes set there, and our eyes are getting set there as well, because we need to plant another church. Plant that church while simultaneously, he's talking about, once this one reaches the 200 member mark, that's when he can hand it off to other workers and him go full-time into this new church plant. I could spend more time talking about other missions partners and churches that we visited in that part of India. Let's focus our attention for a bit more on the untold story in this account in Matthew chapter 8. The untold story. We're given no background information to help us understand what the touch and the word of Jesus meant to this leprous man. As a result, maybe we read through the text and maybe we think, oh, poor guy, he's got leprosy. That must be terrible. Yet most of us have never seen leprosy in our lives. So maybe we don't quite understand it. The best we can do is just try to imagine the background to this story. I imagine him working in a field, trying to grip a farm tool one day, and then maybe feeling a little bit of tingling in his hands. And I can imagine the horror, because he knows what this means. I can imagine him rushing home, because he knows the law says he has to go and present himself to the priest. I can imagine him rushing home so that he can embrace his wife and his children one last time. I can imagine him presenting himself to the priest who diagnosed him with leprosy. And what this means is he's going to be cast out of the city. He can no longer live with his wife and with his children, with other clean people. He can now only be around the unclean. He's now untouchable. I can imagine his hair turning a strange color. I can imagine his skin, maybe at first it turns into a strange pinkish color, but with time, as the life drains out of his hands, it's white as snow. I can imagine as the life drains out of his extremities, his fingers curling up and drying out, and eventually maybe even falling off. People were frightened of leprosy in Bible times. The best I can imagine is growing up in the 80s and 90s is the fear that we had of the HIV virus and AIDS. It was on the news, and we were taught things in school, and we were taught things at home. You know, we were told, when you go out in public, don't even sit on the same toilet seat as a stranger, because we were so afraid of contracting this disease. Now, of course, as we've lived through COVID, we definitely understand the fear of contracting infection. when a leprous person came near, there's always going to be that one guy who yells out, "Unclean, unclean," so that everybody knew to get away from him. It's kind of like I remember sneezing in church after we had first come back during COVID, and everybody looked at me like I'm unclean. We understand the fear of contracting a disease or an infection. But in this text, you know, sometimes we read through a text and I don't think we give the emphasis that certain words deserve. Sometimes we might come to it and say, "Behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him." But when I read it, it's more like, "Behold, a leper jumped out from behind a boulder and knelt before the Lord." That's the way I'm imagining this scene. Because this was outrageous. He knew that he's not supposed to have any contact with clean people. He knows he's not supposed to come near to them. It's not allowed by the law. It's not allowed by the social rules in their society. But as we read this, we must think, well, what great faith he has. Or possibly what great desperation has caused him to do this. I can just imagine the fear on all those onlookers, everybody that's coming down from the mountain, as they see this leprous man jump out in front of them. I can imagine the shock and the screams. But then it says Jesus touched him and saying, "I will be clean." And immediately the leprosy was cleansed. But this part of the story was scandalous as well. Jesus isn't supposed to touch the untouchable. He knows he's not supposed to touch an unclean person. I can just imagine there's always those people when you do something in a social situation you're not supposed to do, the gasp. Can't believe he would do this. Jesus has touched the untouchable and become untouchable himself. You know, you would think that Jesus has probably lost all credibility in this moment with his audience, but actually, exactly the opposite is what has happened. Because, behold, this man jumps out in front of him and he touches him and speaks to him. Jesus is looking at this moment. Remember, he's just been preaching up on the mountain. He's overhauled their concept of righteousness. He's moved it from the external to the internal. So it's a moment where he's thinking, let me show you guys what I was talking about up there on the mountain. Let me show you what I mean. But which action of Jesus came first? Well, it was the touch. I think part of that untold story is the loneliness. Nothing is said here about his loneliness, but that touch healed a great loneliness in this man's life. Can you imagine not being touched by anybody for years? Can you imagine no kisses from your spouse, no hugs from your children, no embraces from your parents? Can you imagine not even a handshake for years, not even a COVID-friendly fist bump? Just nothing. Nobody touches you. Nobody rubs elbows with you because everybody's deathly afraid of you. But then here comes Jesus, willing to touch this man. I think a compassionate touch is what the untouchable world needs from Christians. Sometimes I hear comments or discussions when it comes to mission work or local works. Well, why are we working in India? Or why are we running those buses to pick up those into the city children to bring them here? Well, it's because Jesus never instructed us to only educate our own children. It's because Jesus showed us an example of touching the untouchable, and that's what he wants us to do. But what action of Jesus healed the man of his leprosy? Well, that was the word. When he said, "I will be clean," that's when the leprosy was cleansed. The Word of God's powerful. It's still powerful today. It's still washing away sins when sinners obey it in baptism. But it's been my experience that a compassionate touch of Jesus sometimes prepares the way for the Word of God to be so powerful. While we were in India, what we did for the rest of our time there was we kind of made a circuit driving through parts of the country and visiting different churches that Graymere has planted over the years and working with different missions partners. One that was really the highlight of the trip was a young preacher named Titus Rajendran. Some of you know him because he's actually supported by some Graymere members apart from the Graymere church budget. But some have taken a special interest in him. He works with the church in the Andaman Islands. It's a string of islands out in the ocean in between mainland India and Thailand. But Titus is really a superstar on this trip. He's fluent in multiple languages, but because we didn't have time to go out and visit him, we decided to bring him to be with us, and he could serve as our guide and our translator as we were visiting all these different works. But what I found amazing about Titus is just the way our friendship has grown over the last 2 or 3 years. Possibly you remember back when, at the height of COVID, at the very beginning of COVID, we couldn't meet all together. So you're in your pajamas, you got your coffee, you're sitting in your living room, you're pulling up Facebook where the worship service is appearing on Sunday morning, and we'd ask folks to type in there in the comments, "Hey, Winchester family is here," and that's kind of how we knew who was worshiping together and who wasn't. But maybe you didn't notice that all throughout that period there was also a comment of, "Titus from Andaman Islands is here." Titus began worshiping with us during that time. Then when we came back for in-person worship and we started asking everyone to just pull out your phones and check in online, which, let me remind you, only about half of us do that. But yet, only half of us can do it, but every Sunday there's a check-in from Titus from Andaman Islands who checks in because he's worshiping with us. A couple of weeks ago when I made the announcement that it was Bonnie Davis's 103rd birthday, the first message I got when I got home was from Titus saying, "Wow, 103 years old. What an amazing blessing." So we love Titus. He came, he made my job easy. For years, I've been dropping pins on a Google map so that I could get wherever I need to go in India without relying on anybody else. But I didn't have to rely on any of that, because Titus was there to guide the driver and to make the phone calls and to get us where we needed to go. I need to tell you a little bit about a man named Prabhudayal Emmanuel. That name's kind of difficult, so we've nicknamed him Pubby. That was his wife's nickname for him, but she's allowed us to use it as well. We had been laying the groundwork with Pubby for, we want to plant a new church in India. We've been looking for an opportunity to put some of the missions tactics that we've used elsewhere into place in India. So we laid the groundwork that, hey, we want to plant a new church. We want it to be a city work, not a village work, but a city work that can grow up and then reach out to those smaller villages. So he laid the groundwork for us. We get there. He's identified a city. It's a small city in India. It's only got 700,000 people living in it. But we go with him. He's already located a facility that he wants us to rent. We look at it. It's an easy process. We say, "Let's do it." That was a Thursday morning. We looked at this building. We said, "Let's do it. Let's plant a church right here." By Thursday night, he's sending me messages and photos of him moving a pulpit and chairs in there. He's got an electrician there on Thursday night hooking up the light. On Sunday morning, just 3 days later, they're worshiping with 12 people from that city. So Lord willing, we'll be able to tell you about more growth from that church plant in the next few years. I could tell you more about the other villages and cities that we visited. I could tell you about churches that we visited, about leper ministries and blind ministries and preacher training schools. I could tell you about gardening projects and wells that we saw. I could tell you about sewing ministries that we saw. I could tell you about the children's homes that we support in Sulurpet, how that's grown so much that now there's two children's homes about 12 miles apart. There's just so much going on. It's fascinating and amazing the way that Christians are touching the untouchables in India. And as a result, people are opening up their ears and their hearts to the gospel. But I think it's important for us this morning to notice that the word of Jesus is still in the world today. It's still powerful. It can still save. But where's the touch? Remember those hands that you held up? Where's the touch of Jesus today? It's right there. The compassionate touch of Jesus when we manage our hands well and put them to work. That's what opens up opportunities for the word of Jesus to take root today. Sometimes it takes a compassionate touch before someone will listen to the voice of Jesus. Your challenge, you don't get a sermon just to listen to and say, good sermon on the way out. You get a challenge this morning. That's for every one of us to look for a way this week to offer someone the compassionate touch of Jesus. Look for somebody this week that you can embrace, somebody that you can hug, somebody you can pat on the back, somebody that you can put your hands on and pray. Ask somebody if you can put your hands on them and pray for them this week. Write somebody a letter. Give them a phone call. Make them a meal. Touch the untouchable. Right here in Columbia, Tennessee, there's untouchables that need to be touched by the compassionate touch of Jesus. You know, every Sunday morning, there are visitors in our midst. I know there are this morning. I wonder if possibly someone's here at worship this morning as a result of the compassionate touch of a Christian. It's possible that now that you've been touched by the compassion of the church, that now you're ready to identify with the Lord's church. It's possible that this morning you're ready to accept the word. And that's what we'd like to help you to do. If you believe that Jesus is God's Son, if you've turned away from sinful lifestyles, if you're willing to have your sins washed away in baptism, that's what we invite you to do this morning. Possibly you've strayed away from the Lord and you need us to lay our hands on you in prayer this morning. I'd ask you to meet me down front and respond to the invitation this morning. Won't you come right now as we stand, as we sing?